And now we hear the word of the Lord from 2 Kings, the second chapter, verses 1 through 12. When the Lord was about to take Elijah up to heaven in a whirlwind, Elijah and Elisha were on their way from Gilgal. Elijah said to Elisha, "Stay here. The Lord has sent me to Bethel." But Elisha said, "As surely as the Lord lives and as you live, I will not leave you." So they went down to Bethel. The company of the prophets at Bethel came out to Elisha and asked, "Do you know that the Lord is going to take your master from you today?" "Yes, I know," Elisha replied, "so be quiet." Then Elijah said to him, "Stay here, Elisha. The Lord has sent me to Jericho." And he replied, "As surely as the Lord lives and as you live, I will not leave you." So they went to Jericho. The company of the prophets at Jericho went up to Elisha and asked him, "Do you know that the Lord is going to take your master from you today?" "Yes, I know," he replied, "so be quiet." Then Elijah said to him, "Stay here, the Lord has sent me to the Jordan." And he replied, "As surely as the Lord lives, and as you live, I will not leave you." So the two of them walked on. 50 men from the company of the prophets went and stood at a distance facing the place where Elijah and Elisha had stopped at the Jordan. Elijah took the cloak, rolled it up, and struck the water with it. The water divided to the right and to the left, and the two of them crossed over on dry ground. When they had crossed, Elijah said to Elisha, "Tell me, what can I do for you before I am taken from you?" "Let me inherit a double portion of your spirit," Elisha replied. "You have asked a difficult thing," Elijah said, "yet if you see me when I am taken from you, it will be yours. Otherwise, it will not." As they were walking along and talking together, suddenly a chariot of fire and horses of fire appeared and separated the two of them, and Elijah went up to heaven in a whirlwind. Elisha saw this and cried out, my father, the chariots and horsemen of Israel." And Elisha saw him no more. Then he took hold of his garment and tore it in two. The word of God for the people of God. Thanks be to God.
I wonder if you bow your heads and pray for me and with me as we begin. Lord, I pray that the words of my mouth, the meditation of our hearts, would be acceptable to you. I pray, Lord, that a sermon that is about final steps would be a sermon of joy and not despair, a sermon that might have insight, and a sermon that would bring hope. And your spirit can allow for the conversation of a serious topic and the presence of all these good things. And so I pray for that blessing today in Jesus' name. Amen. Well, today we conclude our series on death and the afterlife. And I'm grateful because some of you have been so kind to say that you've actually found this helpful. I want to be honest, when we started this, actually when I thought about this back in the spring, I thought, wow, that'll be called 4 weeks of depression. You know, that'll be just heavy material. And I really question whether we should do it. But some of you have shared with us that as pastors have gone through this, that you found it, that you've been sort of surprised by joy, which is C.S. Lewis's quote, that you found that you're less anxious about death and that it's been hopeful. And I just am so grateful that that has been the experience that some of you have had. Today, I want to talk not about your death, as I have in the past few weeks. I want to talk about what we do when we are with those who are dying. How do we handle it when people that we love are dying? Many of us have parents who are getting older, or we have friends perhaps that are very sick, and death is something that we just have to face. And so as a pastor, what I can tell you that has helped me over the years is making peace with death. So often in our culture, death is portrayed in stark terms. You know, the hooded figure with the scythe who shows up, the grim reaper. And I think that's really not helpful. I think what that does is says this is something you should fear, or you should be very anxious. This is horror movies, which are very prevalent and common in our culture, always play on the thought that death is something that you face alone. That's where they generate a lot of their fear, is that the person is caught in a situation where they may die and they're alone. Notice that theme in those, well, frankly, don't watch the trashy movies. It was my first bit of advice. But if you're going to, at least figure out why they work. And the reason they leave you anxious is they teach you that you're going to be alone. Or we face death with anger. And it's a anger that runs kind of deep in a resentment at how could life do this to me. And as a pastor, because we are often in situations where people are dying, it's very important to make peace with all that. Because if you don't make peace with it, you can't be with people when they're dying in a helpful way. So the term that's used a lot in ministering to those who are dying, and one that I would invite you to consider this morning, is non-anxious presence. Can you be with someone when they may be properly facing a lot of anxiety about what they're experiencing physically, emotionally, and they might have a lot of, I mean, some people die with tremendous peace, but many of us don't. Many of us, because of what's happening in our bodies, we don't feel peace, and that's not a lack of faith. It's just, what an experience, right? And who trains you for that? And so what's important is that if you're going to be in the room with someone who's dying, that you make peace with the concept of death. If you don't make peace with death, you can't be with someone who's dying in a productive way. And I'll talk about that in a minute. But I just found as a pastor, I had to figure out what I believed about what I believe about death. And I'll tell you what I believe about death. I've decided to change my view on death. And the way I did that is I just embraced its reality. Because here's the deal. Everybody, here's the deal. If you don't get anything else about the sermon, this is the one moment you should listen in. You ready? We're all going to die. Everybody in the room. At some point, is going to die. I used to, there were 150 acres worth of woods next to the home that I grew up in. They weren't ours, which was really too bad. But anyway, that's another story. But the farmer that owned them, we used to go back. I spent most of my summers in those woods. But the truth is, I went back there all year round. And here's what I discovered about that as a child very early. Everything dies. Insects die. You could sometimes find them still on the limb, the tree limb where they died, frozen. It was so cool. I mean, as a boy, you're like, look, it's frozen. You know, birds died. Coolest thing ever was to find a deer skull. Oh, you found the deer skull. It was like you're in the Wild West. I mean, it was just to find the deer skull. And I just realized as a kid that things die. Everything dies. And in the spring, we would go out and the grass was low and the flowers came. And then in the summer, it was hard to walk through the fields to get to the woods because the grass would grow so tall before the hay was made. And then in the fall, everything would change colors and the leaves would start to turn brown. And then it was winter. And in winter, everything in the forest died. And sometimes in the spring, you realize that in the winter, even the big trees died. Some of those big hickories at that time, there's a blight that went through Virginia, and it killed some of the largest hickories, and we hardly have them anymore because of that. And I saw even these big trees that were so vital. You'd come back in the spring, and the leaves would be gone, and you realize that tree's not with us anymore. It's gone. Be at peace. Everything dies. You will die. I will die. Now, it's important to embrace that. It's important to say that out loud. It's important to say that to our children, too, by the way. You don't have to walk into their bedrooms at night and say, hey, by the way, pastor says everybody's going to die. You don't need to do that. But it might be wise as parents to you know, we kind of laugh about Simba and the Lion King walking around the, you know, savannah saying, you know, circle of life and all that. But actually, it's a pretty important lesson, pretty important thing to say. Because that way they don't have to deal with it in the moment when it's such a crisis. Our bodies are finite. They are imperfect. Humans, this is something I want you to hear. Humans are very fragile. We're very fragile. We can die like that. An accident, something we don't see coming. We're fragile. We like to believe we are superheroes. We really do. We act sometimes like we're superheroes. We jump out of planes and off of cliffs and even on trampolines. And we act like nothing can break us. But the truth, doctors will tell you, actually, you know, human body's pretty amazing, but it's fragile. I'm not saying we shouldn't jump out of things or off things. I'm just saying we should be aware of that. So I hope by talking about dying, about how to minister to others, that part of what may happen is that you'll become more comfortable with your own sense of mortality and make peace with it. Don't be angry at it. Don't be surprised by it. Don't reject it. It's part of things. It's okay. I want to study today the account of the prophet Elijah's final journey on earth with his protege Elisha. So Elijah, with a J, is the older prophet, and he's got one of the most interesting stories in the Bible, I think, because he's actually one of the first people in the Bible who gets burned out and just looks at God one day and says, I am done. Like, I've really tried to work hard for you, and I've tried to do all the right things, but I'm just burned out. Can I be done now? And amazingly, God looks at him and says, yeah, there's this guy named Elisha. Go get him. Tell him he's going to replace you. He's your guy. And Elijah goes and finds Elisha, who is like in a field with a plow. And Elijah kind of walks up and goes, hey, you're it. Come on. You know, and it's about that simple. And then so what happens is Elijah with a J and Elisha with an S, Elijah and Elisha, they take this journey together where Elijah is sort of teaching Elisha what it is to be a prophet in Israel. And then they come to a section of the journey. And look at this verse right here. When the Lord was about to take Elijah up to heaven in a whirlwind. Okay, first can I say this? Coolest way to die ever, all right? That's awesome, okay? And not some random tornado. I'm talking the Lord is about to take Elijah up to heaven in a whirlwind. I will probably not be this fortunate or big. I will probably just, you know, die. But this is cool. Elijah and Elisha, they were on their way from Gilgal. Now, what I like about this is, what the narrator is telling you is they both know he's going to die. Now, this is how most of us will die. Some of us will die tragically and quickly in an accident. And I want to say something at this point about that. If you die in an accident, if you lose someone in an accident, it's awful. Because it comes out of nowhere. And you don't get to do the work that is best done when you know someone's dying, which is why you need to think about how you are when someone dies. So the acknowledgement of that, see, the fact that when people die suddenly and unexpectedly, that's hard, tells us that if we do know someone is dying, we should be all the more focused on it. Does that make sense? Does that make sense? Okay. So they know. Now, if you know, and okay, now you know because the pastor just said we're all going to die at some point. Hopefully not tomorrow, hopefully not anytime soon, but it's going to happen. So that affects how we take the journey together. And then if you can just sort of get that in your head, then part of what we can do is accept the truth. And here's that three words, those three words. Go ahead. There you go. Accept the truth. Because Elijah and Elisha teach us that the first step on the journey is to accept the truth. And it's interesting that the narrator tells you what they already know. Elijah was about to be taken up into the whirlwind. But, hey, can you put that text back? I know this is going to be a little confusing today. When the Lord was about to take Elijah up. Now, isn't that great? Because what it says is it acknowledges that God is there and that heaven is there. The Lord was about to take Elijah up. Like, it's going to be okay. So it's not just like we're all going to die and now we can go home and be depressed. It's the part of the truth is the Lord has a place for us. And you have to decide if you believe that or not. That's one of the things that death does, is it pushes us to that critical moment. Now, that first step, when we get to that, what that means is, put accept the truth back up. When we accept the truth, what it means is we can embrace death, not in an ancillary way, but as the major fact of life. And if you can accept that people are going to die, then you can minister to them. And here's the thing that happens if you don't. If you choose to be angry at death, anxious about death, or disappointed that people are going to die, what it means is you can't minister to others when they're dying. Okay? And here's why. Here's Jamie, who I know well enough that without asking her, I can say, okay, let's just say that Jamie's dying. Okay? And she's not. She looks good. Everybody, doesn't Jamie look good today? Yeah, let's just give her a little assurance. But look, if I walk into Jamie's room at home in a hospital, whatever, and I am anxious, I've come to see her, but I'm angry that she's going to die, or I'm anxious, or I'm fearful. Can I tell you something about people that are dying? They have a heightened sense of what's going on around them. They read people very well, typically. Which is amazing, because so often, physically, they're very, very compromised. So if I walk in and I'm carrying anxiety, what's Jamie going to do now? I've turned the tables on her. Rather than me ministering to her, what happens? She now has to minister to me. You see what I'm saying? She has to, think about this. A person is dying. All the physical changes that are happening as you die, all the things that stop working well, sometimes there's pain with that, sometimes there's not, but all this stuff is happening they've never experienced before, and now she's got to do the emotional work of saying, Tom, it's going to be okay. I'm going to be all right. She's got to tell me what she believes about heaven. So my point is this, until you make peace with your own death, and with death as a concept, you simply can't minister to someone who's dying. And you don't get to stand in what I think is the most sacred space in life. I have been, as a pastor, as clergy, we're in with people sometimes, not all the time, but sometimes when they're dying. Sometimes months ahead of time, but they've gotten this news that things aren't going well. It's the most sacred and meaningful space I ever enter with other people. Can I tell you something? It's a beautiful space. It's like a cathedral. It's full of insights and meaning and colors and vibrancy that your regular life, getting up every morning, brushing your teeth, getting your shower, going to work, your regular life isn't the cathedral usually. So make peace with this. Accept the truth. The truth is we all die. The truth is that's the cycle of things. That's how we've been made. It's okay. Now notice what happens when you see these verses that are coming. Look at 2 Kings chapter 2, verse 2. Because notice the caregiving that Elijah, the mentor, begins to do with Elisha, his protege. Elijah said to Elisha, stay here. It's the first time he said that. He didn't tell Elisha back here, hey, stay here, I want to go do something. No. Before he said, come with me so you can see what I'm doing, and then you can do as I do. But when he gets to the point where he knows he's going to be taken to be with the Lord, he says, stay here, the Lord has sent me to Bethel. He's saying, I'm going to die. And he's sort of indirectly sort of testing the waters. Can you handle this? But Elijah said, as surely as the Lord lives and as you live, I will not leave you. Say those five words with me. I will not leave you. So they went down to Bethel. Now look at chapter 2, verse 4. Then Elijah said to him, stay here, Elijah. See, they get down there to Bethel. And then he goes, hey, stay here, because now the Lord sent me to Jericho. We don't know why. It's like God doesn't just say, go to where you're supposed to go. Go to the Jordan. Doesn't say that. He says, go to Jericho. And then the second time, Elijah looks at Elisha and says, hey, stay here. And then Elisha says, as surely as the Lord lives and you live, say it with me, I will not leave you. So they went to Jericho. Now, when they get to Jericho, these 50 prophets show up, this little in-between verse. The 50 prophets look at Elisha and say, hey, do you realize, because the prophets say, you've got this word from the Lord, do you realize that he's going to be taken up into heaven? And Elisha goes, yeah, you don't have to tell me. I get it. And it's sort of, Elisha's sort of saying, why do you think I'm here? And then Elijah said to him, stay here. Because now Elijah knows it's close. The Lord has sent me to the Jordan. Jericho is very close to the Jordan River. And he replied, as surely as the Lord lives and as you live, I will not leave you. So the two of them walked on. And the question is this, can you go the distance? Because if people perceive that you're anxious, angry, or afraid, they'll tell you to stay behind. And you'll miss this wonderful opportunity to minister to them in one of the most sacred, beautiful spaces that there is, which is the moment when people die. There's really nothing that even compares to that moment. But so often, people don't want to stand in it. I remember being in a hospital room a long, long time ago when I was young, and wasn't this church, wasn't this location, nobody you know. But I'm in this hospital room. I'd been called in there because I was a volunteer chaplain. All the clergy in the community volunteered as chaplains in this hospital. And this person's dying, and it's hard. And a member of the family, this guy, he's an adult man. He's older than I was. And he finally just stands up and he says, I can't do this anymore. And he walks out. And honestly, the thought that went through my head is, where is that a box that you get to check? I can't do this anymore. Like, where is that an option? How do you do that? How do you look at somebody who's dying and say, this is too hard? Wait a minute. You're dying, but it's too hard for me? Hey, think about that. But friends, sometimes we do that indirectly. Sometimes we don't do it in that harsh and stark way. Sometimes we do it in a gentle, arm's length way. Now, I also want to make something else really clear as I preach this sermon. I think it's very important to say, being with someone on the journey, going the distance, you're not going to be there probably at the exact moment they die. I mean, if somebody finds out that they're going to die sometime in the next month, I mean, nobody ever gets that, by the way. Nobody, they don't do that. They don't go, you're going to die in the next month. Because who knows? Doctors really don't like playing that game of when's it going to happen, to my experience in hospitals. But you know the time period, right? We're sort of in a special zone here. The likelihood that you're going to nail it and be in the room when somebody dies is exceedingly low statistically. Why? Because you need to sleep. You need to eat. So if you miss the moment when someone dies, you don't need to carry guilt for the rest of your life, because the truth is, if you walked out to get something to eat and they died while you were in the cafeteria, you're not a bad person. You went the distance. And can I tell you something? The person who's dying knows. They know you're with them. They can't control their dying any more than you can. So sometimes people tell me they just feel terrible. Oh, I miss them all. You don't have to feel terrible about that, because if you've walked the distance, but these five words are so important. I will not leave you. Would you say that with me? I will not leave you. When you go see the doctor to see what the matter is, I will not leave you. When you go to the hospital, I will not leave you. When you take your treatments, I will not leave you. When you go back to the hospital, I will not leave you. When you are sick at home, I will not leave you. And when you are in your final days, I will not leave you. Those five words are words of grace and comfort, words of the deepest friendship, words of the wonder of family, the loyalty of love. They're the best words ever. You can't be present at every moment. You have to sleep. Why? You are finite. You are human. You have to attend to yourself so that you can attend to others. But if you can go the distance and be present along with others in the most vulnerable moments, to be a friend, to be the family who is there, oh, that's just like nothing else. There is a reason that at funerals we recall Jesus' words in John 14:18. John 14:18, Jesus is gathered with his disciples for the last time, practically. He's going to be dead soon. He's going to be crucified. And he says to his disciples five words. You know what they are? I will not leave you. Now, it's fascinating that he is saying this to them, but the reason that Jesus has to minister to them is they are in denial about his death. They have told him, you're not going to die. They can't, you're superhuman. We've seen you do miracles. And he's told them, I'm going to die. But he said, I will not leave you. Why do we read them at funerals, those words? Why? Because of the most comforting words ever. I go and prepare a place for you. And if I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again to you and take you to be where I am so that you and I can be together. Nothing like that. Nothing like that. I'll not leave you. A friend of mine who is in hospice work, the reason this is so important, that I will not leave you is so important, is people, when they are dying, will sometimes do very important, what a friend of mine who has been a hospice chaplain says, they will do important soul work. That's her word, soul work. Soul work is when you tie up the loose ends. It's when you say the things that need to be said. The beauty of knowing when you're going to die is, or knowing, you know, having a sense that we've sort of come to that space in life, not knowing the moment, but knowing the season that you're in, is you can just start saying things that you're not prone to say for whatever reason, because of your hang-ups, the way you're raised, all that junk we carry with us. You know, we don't say the most important things so often. Wouldn't it be better if we did? So she said there was this guy in the hospice hospital, essentially. I forget what that's called. And she noticed that a bunch of women were coming in and out of his room. She couldn't figure it out. It was just one day. These women just kept coming in, coming out, coming in, coming out. And he finally, she knew he had been sort of a hard-living person, hard-living, you know what I mean? And they had had conversations about that, and she had gotten to know him and sort of befriended him. And she said, she finally went in, and I don't know what his name was, so we'll call him Frank. She said, Frank, who are these women? And he said, oh, those are ex-wives and ex-girlfriends. And he said, I called them. And to some I say thank you, and to others I say I'm sorry. But isn't it so good that they've come? What's he doing? He's tying up loose ends. I was in the room one time with an older gentleman, a grandfather, a father. His children over a time period came into that room one by one. He touched them. He would reach up from under the sheets. He would bring his hands out. He would touch them. He would just hold their face sometimes. So beautiful. And he would just hold them. He'd look at them. He'd say, it's okay. I'm going to die. I love you so much. It was like a cathedral, and the stained glass windows were just luminous with color and vibrancy. I don't know that that family had ever been so alive. Hey, can I tell you something about you? You're going to die. Me, I'm about half dead right now. I mean, if I make it to the statistical endpoint that I am likely to go to, unless something dumb happens, and something dumb happens is quite possible if you know me. I mean, seriously, it's you know, if I go to the distance that statistically they say I will, I'm a little more than half dead right now. Well, if I know that I'm a little more than half dead, I should probably say things now, knowing that the time in front of me is less than the time behind me. That's the advantage of somebody who's made peace with death. They say goodbye to people properly, every time. You want to be one of those people. Hold a face at the airport in your hand. Kiss her on the forehead. Say, I love you so much, I can barely stand to see you go. But go you must. That was just yesterday. Oh, friends, you got to make peace with all this. You got to ask yourself what needs to be said. And then when you get to that moment, look at this verse. This is really amazing. He walks with him all the way through, and they get to verse 9. And when they had crossed the Jordan, Elijah says to Elisha, "Tell me, what can I do for you before I am taken from you?" And this is the soul work. He looks at Elisha, and he says, what's the last thing? Wow, you really did take this journey with me. What can I do for you? And Elijah says, "Let me inherit a double portion of your spirit." When you read various commentators, nobody really agrees on this one. Nobody's quite sure, in my opinion. Everybody's sure, but they don't agree with each other. You see what I'm saying? So in my world, that's like nobody's quite sure, but you know, I'm sure when you talk to them, they're sure. But the point is, he says, "Let me inherit a double portion of your spirit." I think the thing that Elisha's looking for is the blessing of his mentor. Just the blessing. So look at the next verse then. Verse 12, Elisha saw this and cried out, my father, the chariots and the horsemen of Israel." In other words, Elijah looks up and he sees what God is doing. He sees that Elijah is going to be taken from him. He sees this is it. This is that moment. Is it happening? It's happening. And Elisha saw him no more. But then notice what he does. He's walked with him. He's been with him. He has not been anxious. He's not been full of fear, doubt, or anxieties, or anything else. He's not angry. He's not any of those things. But now the time's come, and Elijah's gone. And notice how smart Elisha is. Then he took hold of his garment, and he tore it in two. Now, what I love about this is, in America, we don't have decent grief rituals. But in Israel, in ancient times, they did, and the rending of the garment was one of them. You would tear your garment in half, and you would, what that just mean is, it's like losing you. I felt like my soul was ripped in two. That's how much I love this person. And can I tell you the beauty of being with people when they die? You realize how deeply God has blessed you. You realize things about your life that you won't see any other time. Oh, to lose a parent, even if they've not been the best parent, even if they've been kind of a mess, but to lose a parent, the one who brought you life, to lose a child. To lose your brother. Last service, guy in the back, I'm preaching the service. I was in the room when his brother was dying in his 40s. To lose your brother, to lose your sister, to lose your spouse, to lose a friend, to lose any of these people, to lose these, you suddenly realize what a gift it is. And so, the last thing I'll say to you in the sermon is this. You have to, I forget how I put it, yes, you have to attend to your own grief. The truth is, we begin our grief as people are dying. But look, it's not like this. I knew them, I loved them, I walked with them, I learned from them. Then there was a period when I walked with them as they were dying, and now it's all good because that's over. And here's the problem with dying. Dying's busy. Dying is full of decisions. So, are we going to be home or in the hospital? Are we going to call hospice, or do we need a hospital bed? Do we need the treatment? Can the nurse come? Can the shots come? Can you give them something for their pain? Can you do this? You're attending, attending, attending. And then when people die, it's like this. And suddenly all the activity goes. And the funeral is held. And now what do I have? Well, let me tell you what you have. You have your grief for a while. Make peace with grief. Grief is like death. It's been portrayed as a hooded specter. Walk with grief for a while. Feel sad. Give your heart to God. Say, "Oh, I don't know how I'm going to go on without this person." Because when you do that, you will see that everybody else around you is also God's blessing. when other people reach up and touch you, you'll say, oh my gosh, I still have a friend. I still have others. There's some people you never replace. You never replace parents. You never replace a sibling. You never replace a child. But you can see differently the blessing that others are. And my hope is that if you do this properly, then when your other child comes up, you won't see them as a replacement. You will see them for the blessing that they are. When the other friend comes up, they won't be a replacement, but you'll see them for the blessing that they are. And then you'll become a person of hope, like those people that were in slavery. African Americans in this country, black people in this country, brought over from Africa, served in bondage, died, hundreds of them on ships coming over to America in abject conditions, lived their whole lives in chains, treated poorly, whipped. It's amazing these people had faith. It's amazing these people had hope. And you know what they did when they talked about death, when they talked about heaven? They said, that's going to be for us. That's going to be good. And they died with hope despite the circumstances. Because of their hardship, they saw heaven as something that was the best thing ever to be embraced. And they wrote songs about it. This last song we're going to sing. Yeah, hurry up. I should have told you sooner. We're going to sing this song. We're going to sing this song. And as you sing this song, you know, so often when you sing in church, you go on autopilot and you're just like, yeah, whatever. And you sing and you don't think about it. I do this sometimes. I hate to admit it. Don't go on autopilot. Look at what these people sang. Everything we believe that is good is in our hymns and in our songs.